Frank Foti.
Thank you. Yeah, don't get me started on the railroading thing, as Gordon Carter would attest, because we'll be here forever. And if any of you afterwards, I'll be around for the lunch, and when I ask about railroading, I'd be happy to chat about that, including a winter project I'm going to have this winter, because I do have a live steam locomotive, and I recently found that the boiler's showing some age. So I'll be doing two things this winter. I'll be developing some new back-end algorithms for audio processing and retubing a eighth-scale boiler. So put that in the mix and what have you. Today, I'm going to be talking about some stuff that is audio processing related, and for myself, which is be stepping outside the box a little bit, because most of my career has been dealing with radio and audio processing, but we'll stay in the audio processing domain because our company has gotten involved in the world of audio processing for television and DTV especially, as earlier this year we partnered up with Linear Acoustic, a company that's based in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and they've very quickly and in short order time have taken the lead in the area of signal processing for television. So knowing that February 17, 2009 is vastly getting closer and closer, there's a number of things regarding what we like to refer to as audio myths and some realities that I'd like to talk about today. So let's see here. There we go. Some of this you may be aware of, and there are rules regarding DTV broadcasting with regard to the audio. The FCC does mandate the use of what's known as ATSC A/53D, and basically this here gives a simple overview about what the rules, so to speak, talk about. Much different than what we've done with analog television or a conventional AM and FM radio, where there's an absolute peak ceiling with regard to audio level going into a transmitter. But nonetheless, there are still certain things that we have to adhere to. North American digital cable standards also recognize many of the same aspects regarding audio for transmission. A lot of this was defined back in 1995, and they talk about separate audio and audio control, and they talk about something called a metadata system. For those of you who may not be aware of metadata, it's the concept where we have a bit stream that's carried along with the audio that is could be thought of as like a descriptor or descriptors with information about that audio signal, as well as certain parameters that can be used on the consumer side where the metadata could be used to either invoke audio processing, and then that can be further broken down into light, medium, or heavy, or no audio processing, along with other aspects. Loudness and dynamic range are also defined and separated, along with the aspects of having one encode method serving many different viewers. So theoretically, there's no need for audio processing by local stations, but in practice, we have found that this has not been the case. I can honestly say that it was well over 10 years ago, there was a paper that was given out at an AES convention out in San Francisco, where the folks from Dolby were giving an overview about the AC3 system, the Dolby Digital system, and how it was going to be implemented using HD television. And the gentleman who oversees a lot of that, a fellow I've gotten to know quite well over the years, my name is Steve Lyman, I have a lot of respect for him, but he was talking about how this metadata system and how it was going to work, and I'm sitting there and I'm looking at all these block diagrams, and I'm seeing that the system's basically a wideband entity, and I'm thinking back to the days of, you know, in radio, and I'm sure there's plenty in the room here that would relate to back in the days of using the Automax and Volumax on AM and FM radio stations, saying, you know, those wideband things, you know, they had a place in their day back in like the 60s, but this is a whole new era, and I don't think it's going to work. Well, yours truly, being someone who, you know, is quite competitive and is willing to stand up and ask questions in any forum, started raising his hand and poking holes in the whole system. And they kept telling me that I should stick to radio and keeping things loud and proud as fortunately, we've been able to do over the years. But I kept saying to myself that if they implement the system as the way they describe, there are going to be problems. And many of the things that are outlined here on these general points, we've come to find that they are true, and not only from my own perceptions, but from the comments and feedback that we've received from broadcasters that are paying more and more attention to the HD side of life now that we have a deadline vastly approaching. We do know that loudness shifts within local programming. You know, if you've got a network feed coming in, and if I may, you know, since in the sports world, we generally don't have a lot to cheer about in Cleveland, but Monday night we really did because the Browns, you know, I was there, you know, like from like 8:30 to 11:30, I thought hell froze over, you know, I'm like, is that the Browns blowing out the Giants? But in any case, you know, you had a network feed coming, and while a lot of that could have been, or I'm sure was properly dealt with and adjusted on the HD side coming from network, you know, the local affiliate, when they switch to either the local spots or local, you know, news bumpers and things of that nature, there's going to be these loudness disparities because the way the system is designed to operate, it doesn't take into consideration what's the local insert going to do. Along with how is dynamic range of network programs set up and adjusted as compared to what's going to happen in the local side. You know, metadata defines something as dial norm along with, you know, other loudness characteristics, but if those are set differently than what could possibly be set on the local side, problems are going to be, they're going to manifest themselves. Loudness is supposed to be managed by the metadata. And the reason I say it's supposed to be managed by the metadata is we've already observed that, you know, when metadata is authored and it's supposed to be authored at the program content point, especially like in commercials, immediately I said to myself, what's not to say that somebody authoring metadata for a commercial where they want the voice to really pop through, that they don't boost up, you know, the dial norm by 3 or 6 dB. So that where the dial norm is set and what the dial norm of the actual audio signal is, if there's a difference, guess what? It's going to appear louder coming through the set-top box or your television receiver as to where it's supposed to be. So this is something where, you know, if you read the specifications about the use of the system, quote-unquote, good engineering practice is supposed to be employed when setting metadata. Well, is this happening? Well, I need to share an anecdote, which is my father. While I may be involved in audio or electrical engineering and the engineering side of life, my father, and I'm fortunate enough to still have him, is, and I know I'm biased when I say this, he's literally a mechanical engineering genius. He really is. If you look up, you know, if you go on any patent site and look up Sam J. Foti, you'll see many patents regarding the manufacturing of flexible hose. But in any case, my dad's a gadget guy. So a couple of years ago, he decides to put in this really nice television system, and he's going to do it right and get the speakers and the whole nine yards and all that kind of thing. And he gets the thing set up, you know, goes to the HD, and the picture is spectacular. It's like, you know, watching, you know, like looking out a window, but most of us know that by now. And the audio's all over the place. Well, within minutes, the phone in my house rings, and, you know, my dad having a bit of a Sicilian accent, it goes something like this. Frankie, excuse my language, get your ass over here because the audio, it sucks. You got to fix it immediately because I have no idea what the hell is going on. Well, when your father, who's about my size with bigger hands, and I got fairly big hands, calls, and he's a very loving man, calls and says, you better get your butt over there because the TV's bad, you do it. So I get over there, and he's sitting there, and he's showing me all these things, and my stepmom, who, like, you know, has a little bit of a hearing issue, is listening, and the audio's all over the place, and, you know, but every time he'd go back to over-the-air TV, you know, conventional analog, it was fine. He'd go to the, you know, the HD side, and it was horrible. And it wasn't just one or two of the stations, it was all of them. So needless to say, my dad is probably the only parent in the face of the planet that has an Omnia 1 audio processor on the output of his television so that the audio's fixed. And if you think I'm kidding, dial, you know, 216-442-0191, and he'll tell you. Well, needless to say, that fixed the thing. And I said, and I told him about we were in the process of purchasing or merging with this company. And he looked at me and he said, "You're not moving fast enough. Get on it." So, needless to say, You know, if I don't have a, you know, a real testimonial that we've got a problem regarding the stuff for television, you know, I'll be happy to, you know, share the story with many more people. Now, regarding loudness and metadata, there are methods out there that are, you know, used to measure loudness, and the one that is being investigated is this ITU BS.1770. It may replace the ATSC use of LEC-A, but it's essentially similar. The problem that we've come to determine is that these methods, the way they measure loudness, it's done over a period of time. Well, you know, the ear responds to loudness variations within milliseconds. You know, how many of us have done the old A-B punch on the radio dial where, you know, station A was louder than station B, you know, where you've had to sit in the car with a program director for umpteen hours because the cymbal crash on some record by The Who was not as loud as the same cymbal crash on another radio station. By the way, I've never had to do that ever one time in my life. Hundreds maybe, but not once. But in any case, the point of the story is that the loudness perception happens instantaneously, and they say that if you give it a few, you know, even a couple of milliseconds of difference from, you know, one signal to another, your frame of reference gets lost with regard to loudness deviation. I share that because the way that they're intending to really look at loudness is done over a longer period of time, and when we switch in and out of from network to news or to local commercials or just commercials in general, these loudness variations are very abrupt, and we need a better method. So up to right now, there's really not been an appropriate method for real-time loudness control. Or better stated, I guess I should say, is that for using the systems we have, we need better loudness controlling mechanisms. Now, this here's another bit of a refresher on metadata. It is the data that describes the audio, as I mentioned, but there are some problem parameters, and there are certain things that, based on occurrences that can happen in the coding system or RF overmod at the set-top box or the set, it can cause problems in the receiver. Therefore, there are certain things regarding metadata that if we could better do them up front as compared to relying on it on the back end, we can further improve the transmission with regard to the audio signal. I'm basically going to go over many of the things on a higher level as compared to really digging down deep into, you know, how the metadata works, because I'm going to take an assumption here that many of you have been through a lot of this by now with regard to how the DTV system is operating. Regarding Dolby Digital, the AC3, which is the transmission, you know, the last, you know, in a way we could call it the last mile, down mixing is part of the system, and it's not simply a fixed process. It's controlled by parameters that are contained in the metadata stream, and carried along in the bit stream. It does provide a smooth integration for legacy mono and stereo material along with 5.1 channel programs. And probably the most important part is that we need to ensure that dialogue will be reproduced from your center speaker or in whatever mono type of reproduction you have with regard to, you know, your viewing experience. Now, problems, and there are a number of problems, and we're aware of them, and we've even heard about them. I mean, we anticipated them, and we're trying this, part of why I'm here today, so that we can help enlighten all of you to understand these things now, along with not just that they're problems, but, you know, what we can do to eliminate them or rectify them. Local stations simply don't have the resources with regard to dealing with something that's like an unseen process. You know, when you think about conventional radio and television, there's a box somewhere in a rack that adjustments can be made with regard to the audio and what you're going to be able to do so that you can generate a good consistent sound over the air. Broadcasters are struggling with the overly dynamic range program. Metadata is not helping. And part of this goes to the, you know, anecdotal story I told about my father. You know, if metadata has been misauthored, in some cases metadata is not even set properly, these problems will come down the pike, because if the receiver, meaning your television set or the set-top box, not knowing where those parameters may be set in the default mode, the viewer may be experiencing problems and they have no idea why they are occurring. Excuse me. So if the goal is to preserve the original content and satisfy viewers, it does require lots of time and or advanced tools. And really, I mean, when you think about the way the world is today, you know, and we see this a lot on the radio side, that there's not a lot of time for people to sit in a rack room or, you know, spend on audio processing. And you know, think about radio, you know, the only medium there is audio. And if they're having difficulty being able to have time to work on the audio signal, and that's their main content provider, you know, something's wrong with that picture. So we do have to have advanced tools. And as I see it, the same is existing in the television world as well. Now, I also realize that while most of what I've been talking about thus far deals with the signal that's actually over the air, we also know that the great majority of viewers throughout the United States are watching your signals by way of the cable system. So we've come to find out that, you know, there's a lot of cable systems that are putting audio signals for the DTV side, the HD side, into their systems where there's absolutely no processing or loudness control being utilized. Basically, it's the raw signal, which may contain network-based metadata, but when local signals are inserted, there's nothing. So it's basically raw going to the viewer. So now that problem that I was explaining before, you know, relating to my dad, is made even worse. And I think I even mentioned that, you know, part of it is when he would switch to the cable or his satellite feed, that's where they really noticed the problem, and that's on account of this, you know, issue right here. The DTV signal should be appropriate for the HD 5.1 viewers, but must also work for the down-converted, down-mixed stereo viewers, which is still going to be most of the audience. While it's great to see a lot of these, you know, TVs flying off the shelves at all the electronic stores, and, you know, I'm even amazed, you know, when I'll be like in a coffee shop and I'll hear people, you know, just generally people I don't even know, they'll be, you know, listening in and they'll be talking about, you know, is this thing real about, you know, in February, I got to get rid of my TV? I mean, it's implanted in their minds. The point is that the viewers, they're aware of this, but, you know, for the most part, they'll probably go get the nicer set top, you know, or the monitor, but it's going to be a while, I think, before multi-channel sound really takes hold in the average listener's or viewer's experience. So we have to make sure that the conventional stereo and mono signals, even in the new environment, is supported. Excuse me. So who's responsible for getting it right? Ultimately, it comes back to the license holder, you know, the station itself. So, you know, you're generating that content. It's up to the broadcaster to make sure that the signal leaving the facility is done right. Analog, so let's think about it now for a second. Analog stations would not think of running without a mod monitor and a processing safety net. So why would a DTV signal do the same? You know, I mean, if we're moving forward with technology, why would we take a step back with regard to how we're dealing with the audio signal? Now, tools do exist. Now, I realize I've, you know, pointed out some things that are of difficulty, but there are tools out there. Loudness meters are required, and they are the new audio mod monitors for DTV stations. You know, for those of you maybe here regarding radio, I mean, it's pretty much the same if HD radio were to become successful, and the key word there being if on the radio side. Because, you know, in the digital domain, there's nothing beyond full scale. You know, you can't get plus 3 dB full scale. Some try, though. You know, just look at the way they master CDs today. File-based content can be corrected in the file domain. It does get it close, but it does not fix the dynamics. So while there's things in the content or the content servers that can be tweaked, it's still not the absolute answer, and still we're not, you know, remember, there's always going to be live programming as well. And then we come back to wideband and multiband processing. Thus far, much of what's been available in the DTV world, with the exception, I believe, of, you know, our company has some devices, there's a couple of others out there, most of it's all been wideband, and the myth that is, you know, that we're trying to bust, basically, has been the myth from Dolby saying you don't need any processing. You know, the metadata system is perfectly fine. And another story that's sort of anecdotal but it's real is the gang at Linear got a phone call from a television manager, not an engineer, a manager, who had had his fill of getting viewer complaint letters about these audio problems. And they were, you know, the average person was pretty much saying, you know, either fix it or, you know, I'll watch your competition. And so what had ended up happening was the manager, like probably most of them do, they go down to the engineer and say, what do you make of this? The engineer said, oh, you know, I don't know what the problem could be because we don't need anything. You know, the Dolby system does it for us. And I says, but well, if that's true, then why am I getting these complaints? Well, the manager not happy with that kind of answer because basically the engineers had bought, you know, had taken their time in drinking the Dolby Kool-Aid, looked into it on his own, and he contacted Tim Carroll at Linear Acoustic, told him about the situation. Tim, being an enterprising young man, jumped on the next flight to San Francisco with one of our products, you know, Linear Acoustic processors, put it on the air, and this was months ago. And recently, talked with the same gentleman, all problems have been resolved. And basically what it comes back to is that the system, while in concept, is a very good idea, the way it was implemented left a lot to be desired. So what I'm sharing with you is that, you know, as you know, February 17th is getting closer, you need to make sure that your transmission side for the audio is properly dealt with, or, you know, on that day, you know, the switchboard may be lighting up quite a bit with regard to complaints due to viewers. Now, there are smart DTV audio processors, and they are available today. And I'll go into some of that in just a second here. The Dolby system, as I mentioned before, using the metadata is a very good idea. Matter of fact, one of my laments to the people at Ubiquiti, you know, the HD radio people, is that, you know, you've got this data, why don't we implement some form of metadata for radio? You know, no reason we couldn't do that, and no reason we couldn't further enhance the audio experience in the radio side. But for some reason, they seem to tune me out. Maybe they're on FM and I'm on AM. But the concept of using wideband processing is not a good idea. And the wideband concept in the Dolby Digital system was developed by Dolby. And this goes back to the questions that I asked back in the early 90s when Dolby was first explaining the system, which became adopted as the de facto standard here in the United States. And I remember saying, you know, wideband processing for audios, you know, for transmission has been out for, you know, many decades. Why would we bring it back? There are ways to do multiband processing that dispel, you know, the myths that, oh, you know, multiband audio processing destroys the original content, this, that, or the other thing. Well, if you spend any, you know, amount of time, and I've spent a moment or two dealing with multiband audio processing and the development thereof, there are ways to maintain the integrity of the original content, utilize multiband processing, but not end up with the annoyances that wideband processing brings in, which, you know, most notably is like having holes punched in the mid-range by bass frequencies and things of that nature. So the analogy, it's sort of like going, you know, the way the system is as of today, is like going from an Omnia backwards to an Automax. And, you know, as of yet, I'm unaware of a single phone call to our support department in Cleveland where we have a broadcaster who's put an Omni on the air and taken it off and replaced it with an Automax. So there's no reason that television, which has been, you know, historically the, you know, revenue generator in the broadcast industry, you know, nothing against radio, should be doing this to the viewer, you know, especially at a time when, you know, every viewer is going to be even more critical to the income of your radio station, as you know, as we're embarking on what could be some challenging economic times. When you think about it, there's far less processing required. If you get the loudness right at each stage to minimize the amount that must be done, and by each stage I mean, you know, okay, what may be coming down on the network path, just double check my time here. If you're getting it right coming down from network, well, that's one stage that theoretically should be operating okay, and I'll touch on that, how we can make sure that that's correct in a moment. But also, if you have, for like your local, like the newsroom or local live content, have a device there that's going to make sure that the audio levels are properly adjusted and balanced, so that when you go to local insert, that there's a proper, a good transition or seamless transition between the two, as well as what we call having a function in another stage of what we call like an ingest processor, something that can deal with the server-based content, so that the audio levels and the metadata levels that may be residing on the server are done properly. So those are the ways that we can ensure that every stage is properly dealt with correctly. And then when you put it all together and then put it through the final encoder and then out to the transmitter, you can pretty much be 100% certain that the signal that's going to reach your viewers is going to be correct at every moment of your broadcast day. Now, regarding the audio processors themselves, they must support metadata and take advantage of the clues to alleviate aggressive processing. What do I mean by this? There's a number of scenarios that exist today where the audio levels and the metadata do not agree. And actually an idea that, if I may take credit for, and this led Tim Carroll to leave Dolby and start Linear Acoustic, was what if we could have a device that looks at the audio and looks at the metadata, and if everything's okay or copacetic, leave it alone. But if there's something wrong, either fix the audio to be where the metadata claims it should be if the audio is out of range, or the reverse. If the audio's in the proper range, rewrite the metadata. So then you've got a good signal that's going on to the viewer, and then the disparities will go away. In short form, this would eliminate the problem of commercials been mastered, it comes down the pipe from network, the metadata is off by 6 dB because they want that voice that got to come screaming through, except that now we've got a device that says, whoa, metadata is wrong. I'm going to reset it to where it needs to be. Now the levels are properly passed on to the viewers. This is sort of what we refer to as like smart processors that can satisfy both the viewers and the program producers. And this also touches back on what some people may, raise issues, so to speak, as to, why wideband may be chosen over multiband. But again, a smart audio processor will know the right things to do so that the audio integrity is maintained. Upmixing is a useful and successful used tool. And by this, it's basically being able to take legacy mono or stereo programming and creating a multi-channel content. There was quite a bit of upmixing was done for the Olympics. What many of you may not be aware of is that all of the audio that came back to the United States from China was dealt with in mono, stereo, and 5.1, not with anything done by Dolby, but done by equipment provided by Linear Acoustic. And basically that came about because we were able to get with NBC, spend time and show them where all these issues that I've been talking about are. They were in agreement. They've been utilizing our stuff for quite a while, and we were chosen over Dolby, and there were zero problems reported with regard to all the audio for the Olympics. Now, upmixing is not a dirty word. It does turn two channels into 5.1. It's used to keep the sound field of the output stream consistent, and it's useful when metadata is not available. And again, there are going to be instances where metadata is not available. Uses a production tool to help make better 5.1 mixes quicker, but it does not replace 5.1 mixing. Let's not confuse that. And contrary to unfounded rumors, upmixing does work and has been used at all times by all networks every day. And again, I mentioned the Olympics, which is something that we're quite proud of, and as we're told, NBC got some very good feedback with regard to that. So what now? Well, the loudness issue is still being investigated, and until and if something changes, dial norm must be set properly or the audio adjusted to match the fixed value. That is the manual way of going about it, and I don't know that there's many people available, to be dedicated, to be doing just that. So, you know, the onus is on the creative community to use the system to its appropriate best, or employ some device that'll do it for you. So is that going to happen soon enough? Well, you know, again, there are, like I say, we have some devices that will do that for you. Now, what if it's not solved? Well, there's some consumer-based loudness control, but again, you start getting asking things of the consumer. You know, I think of, you know, like, you know, every now and then, you know, I always have to kind of chuckle at my girlfriend where, you know, she says, you know, I need to get this new TV by February 17th. Meanwhile, she's got this big, nice HD TV sitting up in her living room. And I'm thinking, if she doesn't realize that she already has the goods in-house, you know, how am I going to say, sweetheart, you need to go get a Turk VR1 TV loudness regulator and hook it up so that the McDonald's commercial isn't coming through, you know, to the point of annoying you. So we have to realize that this is something we really do need to fix on the transmit side, because if we're going to ask the consumers to do it, we're shooting ourselves in the foot. And let's remember, there's many, many millions of legacy sets. You know, you guys are going to laugh, and this is true. You know, here I develop audio processing, and we now have a company that does the stuff for TV, but yours truly does not have cable or satellite. I got rabbit ears. So I'm one of those millions with legacy set, and we'll probably have to go out and get a set-top box, or break down and get a TV by the 17th of February in 2009, which is getting quite close. Now, if what I'm sharing with you isn't enough, I don't know if any of you have heard about this thing called the CALM Act. The acronym is something like Consumers Against Loudness, something or other. And this was brought forward earlier this year by this Congresswoman Eshoo, who happens to be from the Bay Area. And where's Dolby located? The Bay Area. Now, if this becomes law or not, I don't know, but basically what she has done is introduce a bill into Congress that would force television stations to regulate loudness, or basically would force television stations to employ better audio conditioning so that commercials or those loud segments are not annoyances. Or, you know, when you're watching some old movie and you got the volume cranked all the way up so you can hear the dialogue, and then they go to the local break or a network break, it gets out of control. So, you know, I don't know personally that I'm all that enthused that the government needs to get involved, but the fact that it got awareness by the government is of concern. And if I was a broadcaster, I'd pay attention, not so much to the act, but to do something to make sure that, you know, the facility I'm involved with is not falling under the complaints is brought by something like this. You know, just imagine if they brought something forward saying their radio stations were too loud. Then I would have to go into making parts for live steam engines, I guess. So, you know, we don't want to get into a situation where something like this may happen. Although, to think about it, I do tend to remember, because I don't know if he's still in the room, but years ago, back when I was still playing at radio, somebody tried to create something, and I think they were trying to, after, you know, Eric Small became quite successful with composite clipping, of where they tried to get the FCC to have some kind of rule that would get a radio station in violation of too excessive squaring of the baseband signal. Guess they never saw diodes before. But in any case, we don't really want to see things come up where, you know, the government gets involved. But the whole thing here about lower ratings, that could be real too. You know, I mean, what I'm talking about earlier about, you know, the station manager, and I think it was KPIX in San Francisco, stuff like that's happening. And consider that happened now where, you know, the viewership, while it's still growing on the HD side, it's going to shift in a big way come February. And, you know, just want to make sure that, you know, get the word out there so that, you know, everything is copacetic come February of next year. So what can you do? Well, work with a company that understands DTV audio from every angle, from Hollywood to the network affiliate, through the cable and satellite, right through to the consumer. And if I may say so, we are that company. We've got people that have been involved with everything from program content all the way through audio coding, signal processing. There's a number of us, not just Frank, But you know, we have answers, and that will eliminate all these challenges that I brought. And then trust the people who are part of developing the DTV audio system, and they continue to innovate solutions. Tim Carroll was a part of the Dolby team, and Tim knew that, you know, matter of fact, in my early questions of the Dolby system, it was Tim Carroll who came to me on the side and said, look, I understand what you're saying, and I'm not really going to argue it. And, you know, while he was giving me the company line, you know, I read between the lines to know that, you know, that I was onto something. And then he too knew that there was going to be something, and he eventually left Dolby to start his own company. And when you think about it, you leave something like, you know, the big double D, which is a major force in the electronics industry, that takes a lot of gumption. And, you know, I'm glad to know that, you know, I'm working alongside someone of the, you know, with that level of energy. The other thing is, do install a modern DTV audio loudness processor and loudness meter, and get back to all the other things that you've got to do on your list. Again, it comes back to, you know, either have the tools, or somebody's going to have to be, you know, doing the audio adjustment by Armstrong. And in the world today, in broadcasting, radio or TV, I don't think that that's basically, you know, out there with regard to time. So, how to pick a processor. The must-haves are metadata support and proven loudness control. You know, for how many years I've read about the old analog processors where they talked about having the CBS loudness controller, yet TV stations still had loudness problems. What we've done is we've developed loudness controlling mechanisms that do work and will eliminate the loudness problems on television. Also should have upmixing and downmixing capabilities, because you're going to have those situations dumped into your lap. Some should-haves: a built-in Dolby encoding system, you know, makes it even easier. If the whole thing's right there, it's less stuff to worry about. You've got a good coupling between the audio processor and the encoder. It makes it much easier. Extensive SAP and DVS support. And then some of these others are more utilitarian, but, you know, we do live in the computer age where nice GUIs and things of that nature do matter. So easy front panel control. It would be nice dual power supplies, or, you know, the capability of SDI, GPR, TCP remote. So you know, those are just some things, you know, to keep on the front of your mind. February 17, 2009 is real. Don't get caught off guard, because it's going to be happening. And, you know, if you do get caught, try to remember some of the things I talked about today. And, you know, if there's a way that we can be of help, you know, check out our website. You'll be able to see that we've got a number of various items that will address every scenario in the DTV audio world, or actually, well, for whatever amount of time is left in the analog world. I thank you for the opportunity to speak today. One thing I would like to say in closing, and I was mentioning this, I think, to Leonard before I got started, it's always a pleasure to come up here to Wisconsin and either share a story or talk about some technology or something of that nature. But more important, I'd like to tip my hat to the guys, I know Don and Leonard, and the rest of the crew, Linda and the committee that puts these things together, because our industry is shrinking, and it's up to us, our generation, to either find the new blood to bring into it, but also it's good to be able to see where, you know, a group can get put together, where we can bring in people to talk about various technologies and keep each other in the know. So, you know, I matter of fact, from time to time I get a chance to speak at the Ohio broadcasters thing, and I say to them, you know, you guys ought to take a page from the gang up in Wisconsin, because they do a very good job in putting together this clinic, and it's nice to see the SB get involved. And I just want to tip my hat to all of you guys, because this is a very good forum. On that note, I say thank you. If there's questions, I'll be happy to take them.
Thanks for the kind words, Frank. I have two questions. The first one is, has your company been asked to be involved with anything involving lip sync issues and remedies in any way?
I know that Tim Carroll's been very involved with it. On those specifics, I don't have an answer. I could, you know, on the exact specifics, Tim's been very much involved with it, and I'm sure he'd have better, you know, a better answer for you than I would. I apologize for not being able to give you a concrete answer.
And maybe you can't answer this one either, but does your product, your linear acoustics product, is there added latency through that product for the audio?
I believe there is some latency, but I also believe that what they have is there's a way to make an adjustment so that latency is resolved in the product itself.
Okay, but at least it would be fixed in any case, yes. I would imagine. And then I lied, I have a third question. In your upmixing scheme, I have nightmares about the old stereo simulator when we first started stereo and television and the going and collapsing. What's the reaction time and so on and so forth, and is it something that's going to drive people nuts by rear popping in and out and that kind of thing?
No, again, that's something I know that Tim and one of the developers in Lancaster, Leif Clayson, devised. And having had the chance to listen to the other upmixing methods where the problems that you mentioned exist, Tim swears that matter of fact, he keeps claiming that I've probably listened to a fair amount of content that I didn't realize was upmixed by their device, and if so, I didn't hear any of that. And I have to be honest, that there's certain things about upmixing that scare me as well, because as we've dealt with and still are pursuing the concept of 5.1 audio on radio, and we've been doing some very successful tests with using the FM Extra system. When I've heard certain things that were upmixed, to my ear, it left a lot to be desired. I think sometimes, but then again, with music, I think it becomes at times a bit more challenging. But I do know that Tim put a lot of work in this product that they call the UpMax, and that the reviews back on it have been that there have been no annoyances, and that at some point, probably in the not too distant future, I'll spend more time looking at it myself to get a better understanding as to how they're pulling it off.
Frank?
Yes.
One of the problems I see is embedded audio plants that just run all their, they don't run a separate AES switch or anything. It's all embedded through the plant, and so there's no place. They just keep passing everything through as a package. Seems to be an issue. I mean, like I listen on DirecTV, I would take it's all embedded audio from receivers through uplinks again, and channels are all over the place. And
right. One of the things is that in some of those embedded scenarios is we do have the capability of breaking it out, like where there's SDI involved, and we'll break the video out from the audio and then put it back together so that it can be passed on as a package. And we know that there are a number of different form factors where in some cases you may be just dealing with AES audio, maybe dealing with SDI and things of that nature, and that's all been taken into consideration.
We're going to be going through it. We're an ABC TV affiliate, and we're going to be going through an HD upgrade they're doing. And they're going to be offering eight channels of discrete single audio.
Right.
And, two of those will be left and right. And I'm wondering, like, now when they're stereo left and right, they do have some Dolby encoding, Is that going to continue, or is that going to be phased out, you think?
You're asking a good question, because I don't think it seems like each of the networks have settled on different methods, and we've heard some of the same things that you've mentioned about ABC, and I know that we've been into some discussions with people at ABC, and the hope is that as we pretty much do on the radio side, everyone will standardize on a method, but if that continues or not, I don't have that answer.
Frank, back to the basics questions here, because audio seems to be the hardest thing that us TV broadcasters do. So your point was you got content coming from ABC or whatever network. It's spoken word. It's a movie. You're ingesting into your playout servers all these spots that come in via files. They come in They're highly compressed. Having worked in the post world, you know, you got music, you got effects, you got spoken word that the post production house is highly compressed. And so help me understand in that instantaneous moment, that half second that we switch from this content coming in from the network to our servers that are playing out these spots, how your audio processing can accommodate that in that short period of time, recognize it, and then go about analyzing it and processing it in such a manner that it doesn't blow somebody out of their seats.
Well, that's it. That's a good question. A couple of things. On one hand, many of the algorithms that are utilized in the, let's say the final processor, the device that would be sitting before the encoder, that has multiple stages of processing there. Some wideband, a little bit of wideband, but more importantly, you've got multiband processing, all of which has, reaction time, what we call attack and release, which are simple terms in the, to try to keep it simple, where the reaction is going to be in milliseconds. Also, one of the things that I mentioned earlier is that, using your description, you've got something coming down from the network, and it's been dealt with in a certain way. And then you go to something local. It'll make sense to have a studio-based or a studio pro-based processor, multiband processor, on that signal, so that further reduces any disparities, so that when that switch happens, there may be some abrupt differences that go to the final system, but they're not going to be all that great. The big example that we've been asked about for years, and this goes back to even prior to doing digital television, I had a news director from Channel 7 in Los Angeles who said that for Channel 7 in LA, and it may still be this way, I don't know, but that the biggest revenue generator was the 11 o'clock news. Except that when he was at home watching the television, watching his program, Monday Night Football, the Browns beat the Giants.
At 11 o'clock.
Their news, and he said to me, make me a newsroom processor so that my newsroom guys sound like Scott Shannon on Z100. Now, we did do that, but the point is that the way everything was set up was that, the newsroom was basically a raw, naked signal that would, even though they had, some other audio processor downstream, they're not set up and designed to react in the way that we're talking about. Now we have the opportunities to do these things. And also, when metadata is employed, we do have the capability to quickly take do a look-see. Audio level is here, let's say, for the sake of discussion, minus 24, should be at minus 10. I can change it in the course of a frame or a few samples. And those changes will happen quick enough so that the ear, even though there may be a minor variation, the ear won't go, whoa, which is what's happening now.
Well, on the same vein, one could either bury something in metadata. I mean, in the old analog world, we could throw a flag on VITSI, but there's something as simple as, say, a GPI-type closure that says, fine, I'm on network, have the closure in, and the processor is in low disturbance mode. It's not going to do much because it's nailed down to the network. You open that, you're local, you're running off your local servers and switchers, you do things in-house a certain way and keep the house standard. The flag, the tally goes away, whatever you want to call it, and boom, then the processor is a little more aggressive or whatever.
Sure.
I'm just saying that's a simple thing to do. I mean, it's the way early DTV was done. A lot of stations, they just up-converted the studio and passed the network through initially, and this is sort of, back to the future.
Well, while that's true, and what you're saying can work up to a point, you're still not, you still have the situation of what do you do with the local?
Basically, you're telling the processor not from the incoming audio, but from a command saying, hey, I'm in the studio now. I'm in studio mode.
Well, I mean, on one hand, there is some truth to that with regard to the Dolby system, except that the Dolby, except that the processing of the Dolby system, in a few short words, is pretty bad. I mean, it's pretty bad, and to the point of where people are complaining. And I would be embarrassed if I was a broadcaster, and the things that I've heard, especially, you know. No question, no question, and please, and by the same token, ladies and gentlemen, I'm not trying to be negative towards Dolby. I would love to have our government say that, you know, only Omnia audio processing could be used in every transmitter across the country, but that has not happened. What we have had happen is a company had their system basically made the de facto standard, and while the coding part works well, and some of the methods for, you know, mezzanine level and generation of things and the metadata concept works well, the whole audio, the actual signal processing itself does not work well. So what we have are we have solutions that will work within the framework and eliminate all the problems. Yes.
This will be the last question. The metadata that they have, has there been any consideration to use that for lip sync to tie it to a frame? So you're always married to the video. That's the problem. We've got to marry the video and the audio together. And have they considered that?
Well,
that might work.
I'll share a little story about metadata. First of all, if you were to contact Dolby and ask them, how can you get inside and look at metadata, they'll basically look at you as like a deer when it's caught in the headlights. They will not divulge information about the metadata. And by the way, they're supposed to. Now, you may be wondering, well, how did you guys learn? Well, it kind of helps to have a guy who used to work at Dolby and a couple of engineers who are good at cracking technologies. And let me say, our company's never done that one time in our lives. We've done that many times. So the point is, we were able to get in there and crack the metadata and come up with a way to basically rewrite it. But the idea that you just suggested, I'll be happy to take it back to the little, you know, renegade pirates back in Lancaster, PA, and pass it on to them. Because, you know, I know the whole sync thing is a big issue. And if there's a way that we can further, you know, reduce or eliminate it, by all means, we're going to go after it.
Okay, Frank. Thank you very much.
No, thank you. And thank you for all your questions.